You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Happy Blue Friday to all the 12s. Fired up to answer your questions in a mailbag-driven episode. Whether you're a regular listener or this is your first time, we're glad to have you tuning in. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. John Schneider hasn't been one to run up the Seahawks company credit card during his previous 11 seasons running the show as general manager, but it's been really interesting watching how he and Seattle's front office have altered their approach this offseason to an extent out of necessity. Just look at the offseason plan to this point and how masterfully it has been carried out. The Seahawks have lost some talented players, Shaquille Griffin being the most notable free agent that left, going to the Jaguars, returning to his home state of Florida. The Seahawks tried to retain him, but the price point ended up being too expensive. And then last week, the Jaron Reed fiasco, the Seahawks trying to give him a restructured contract. He would not sign off on it without a long-term agreement in place. And then he's released. He's now a Kansas City Chief. So those two key pieces on Seattle's defense are gone. But you look at the big picture, the players that the Seahawks have been able to retain when they entered free agency with less than $10 million in effective cap space. They did not have much financial flexibility and a ton of holes to fill. You look at the players that they've been able to retain up to this point. Carlos Dunlap, he was released. They re-signed him at a more team-friendly rate. Chris Carson returns at a team-friendly rate. Benson Mayoa re-signs. They extend Tyler Lockett with a four-year $69.2 million deal that he has earned with his production the last 3 years. They traded for an extended guard, Gabe Jackson, so they upgraded pass protection as Russell Wilson was pleading for them to do with a proven veteran guard. And then, of course, Kerry Hyder coming to town. Hyder is a nice addition to play the base defensive end position. They've done a number of other things as well. But those first five players that I mentioned, looking at Dunlap, Carson, Mayoa, Lockett, Jackson, only one of those players is going to have a cap hit that is $7 million or more. We don't know exactly what Tyler Lockett's structure on his extension looks like yet, but all the reports out there indicate that his cap hit is going to be around $7 million when it was scheduled to be nearly $15 million entering the final year of his previous contract. Three of those players have cap hits of less than $3 million in 2021, and that has happened in part because John Schneider and cap guru Matt Thomas have deployed tactics they would normally frown upon. As I said, this is not an organization that typically likes to kick salary cap money down the road. They don't like to push cap money to future seasons, whether that's through restructured contracts or voided years. They had never used a voided year on a contract since John Schneider's arrival in 2010. In the last 11 years, they had not done that one single time. They have done that with seven players now this offseason, and they're using these voided years to help spread out signing bonuses and lower salary cap hits for 2021. They're backloading extensions for players like Lockett and Jackson to push some money to future years as well. They haven't done any restructures up to this point, but who's to say that they won't still restructure Russell Wilson or Bobby Wagner's contract and turn base salary dollars into a signing bonus if that's what it takes to sign a couple more key players in free agency? This should not be a surprise at this point. This is not normal for the Seahawks, but there's a lot of teams out there that have smart general managers that are doing similar things. And you look at the salary cap plunging to $182.5 million this offseason. Creativity was going to be required for a lot of teams. And the Seahawks, they were in the middle of the pack for salary cap space going into this. There were so many teams that were in the red that needed to make moves just to be able to get back over the cap. And so a lot of teams didn't have money to spend. But with the TV deal that's coming up in 2023, pushing money down the road right now is not a bad strategy. In fact, as I've argued the last few weeks, even before free agency, if you are a smart team, and the Kansas City Chiefs are another example I'll throw out there. They did a number of restructured contracts so that they could go out and get a player like Joe Tooney, who ended up signing a five-year deal with them to bolster their offensive line. They were in the thick of things trying to sign Trent Williams as well. The Chiefs were throwing around big bucks, even with the contracts that they have on their roster with Patrick Mahomes, Frank Clark, some of the other big-time talents that the Chiefs have. They were aggressive because they were kicking money down the road. And the fact that you're going to have this TV deal coming into play in 2023 that's going to net the NFL more than $100 billion over the next 11 years, that money is going to cause the salary cap to grow exponentially during that span. So pushing money down the road a couple of years, you're going to have a lot more money to play with to be able to absorb a dead cap hit. And then you look at a team like the Seahawks that's in the middle of a title window. You've got a star quarterback in Russell Wilson who wants more help around him. This is the way that you can do it right now. And through these efforts, the Seahawks probably right now have between $6 to $8 million in cap space. And over the cap right now, it's $1.79 million. Al Wood's contract is still not in there. They have not updated Tyler Lockett's contract accordingly, though, either. So it's going to be somewhere in that $6 to $8 million range. They may still be able to add another key free agent with the financial flexibility that's been opened up with those voided year contracts, as well as the extensions they signed for Jackson and Lockett. That could be KJ Wright returning. That could be Richard Sherman or Quentin Dunbar coming back for a reunion in Seattle to upgrade the cornerback position. It could be Russell Wilson getting his wish and having Antonio Brown signed, or maybe Golden Tate coming back to Seattle. There are still some really good free agents out there that would address big needs for the Seahawks heading towards the draft. And so I think that we have not seen the last major activity from this football team. They have set themselves up to be able to add some more talent, and then we'll see how the draft plays out, having only three picks heading towards April 29th. And they're not going to have much ammunition to work with. John Schneider will be looking for ways to recoup some picks, but most of the damage is going to have to be done in free agency, and it's clear by the strategy that they have deployed that they knew that's how this was going to be. With the moves they've made, they have set themselves up to be able to go out and add a few more key pieces as they build this roster around Russell Wilson. So overall, again, this has been a masterful job. Are there going to be some dead cap hits down the road because of these voidable contracts? Are there going to be some bigger cap hits in future seasons? Absolutely. But with the salary cap set to go up big time over the next several years, and there's going to be a lot more money to play with, they should be able to handle those financial challenges. They should be able to absorb those bigger contracts without an issue. It's just, again, shrewd business by Schneider and the rest of Seattle's front office, and it's positioned them to be able to continue improving this roster in the arms race that is the NFC West. When I come back in the second quarter, it's time for our Blue Friday mailbag. I'm going to be answering your questions for the rest of the show. Tons of great ones coming from our listeners. Looking forward to the chance to chat about a number of Seahawks and NFL-related topics. Don't go away. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Blue Friday edition. This is your host, Corbin Smith. We're covering everything you need to know about the Seahawks, but what about the rest of sports? Now the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered there as well with Locked On Today. It's hosted by Peter Bukowski. It's all the sports news you need every morning in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get podcasts. It's time for our Blue Friday mailbag. Didn't get a chance to answer questions earlier this week. We've decided to have our mailbag now throughout the rest of the offseason come on our Friday show. Looking forward to tackling a number of Seahawks and NFL topics. First question here coming from Cool Hawk Fan. Rank these positions by biggest need: center, receiver, Sam linebacker, and corner. Interestingly, Cool Hawk fan, this is a really good question, but my list is going to look very similar to the order that you actually had in your question. I have to start with the center position. I still think that is the one spot when you look at offense and defense. That is the one position group the Seahawks need to upgrade both in the short and the long term that really jumps out to me. Ethan Posick, with his one-year, $3 million contract coming back to Seattle in 2021, that is not starter money. He is a very solid swing reserve lineman that can play both guard spots. He can play center. He even has played some tackle in the past. So he gives you versatility. I just don't know that he is good enough to be a long-term starter. In fact, I would hedge bets that there are probably still a few free agents available out there that would be able to come in and compete with him. This is a really good draft class at the center position as well. I've talked about Quinn Miners, Josh Myers out of Ohio State, Landon Dickerson from Alabama, Trey Smith. There are a number of players I think could play this center position that could come in right away and they could compete for playing time with Ethan Posick, maybe win the starting job in training camp. And that's what the Seahawks are going to need to do. They need to take advantage of the center class. And I think that is the position they are most likely to address with their first pick at 56 overall, or if they trade down into the 60s or 70s, as I anticipate they're going to try to do. But there's going to be an opportunity for them to find a good young center in this class. There's a lot of talent and there's a lot of depth at that position. To me, it's still the biggest need for them. And then I would say receiver, adding a third target. Maybe it's not quite as important now that Tyler Lockett has been extended. I had some thoughts in my head about, well, maybe after the 2021 season, the Seahawks might decide it's time to move on from Lockett. But the extension clearly points to that not being the case. That being said, they still need a third target. I think Freddie Swain is the player they're really excited about on the roster right now. He had a solid rookie season that exceeded a lot of expectations as a sixth rounder coming out of Florida, can run routes from the outside in the slot, can create after the catch. So he does a lot of things that I think are going to bode well for his future. I just don't know if he's ready to be the number three receiver yet, though. And there are still some good receivers on the free agent market. And this is a loaded draft class at that position. I've reached the conclusion now with the proliferation of 7-on-7 nationally that we may never see a draft class that is not loaded at receiver again. It's just a position where we are developing so many talented players that are coming from the high school ranks to college, and then they're ready to go in the NFL. These players are much more ready even than 5 years ago to be able to come in and make an impact. And so, again, this is a really solid receiver class that I think you can get starter caliber players in the middle rounds going into day three. And so I expect the Seahawks will take a receiver with one of their picks and add to this receiving core. Maybe they'll add one more free agent as well, but that is a position they need to find an upgrade. And then I'm going to put corner as number three on my list. And the big reason why, I have confidence in DJ Reed and Akella Witherspoon and even Trey Flowers. Flowers has been so up and down in his career, but when he's played well, he's played really well. And he's still a fairly affordable young corner too. Those three guys I think the Seahawks can get by with right now. If you can add Richard Sherman or somebody like that, then absolutely you're going to do it because Sherman is a future Hall of Famer. But the three they have there are solid players that I think they can win with. But none of those players are under contract beyond this year. And I don't know that any of those players have proven that they're worthy of extending beyond that point. They're all going to be playing for new contracts. And that can bring out the best in players. That can really help Seattle secondary. But I still think that is a position you need some long-term answers. And there are a lot of lengthy, athletic corners that fit the prototypical build that Seattle likes at the position in this draft class. And so I think you want to take advantage of that. Those three positions right there are the top three needs for this team going into the draft. Second question from Augustin Castro. How do you envision the Seahawks are planning for left tackle Dwayne Brown? He's still playing elite, but carries the risk of his age. He's going to be 36 in August. Is finding an heir apparent in the plan for this year's offseason, or do you believe they'll roll with what they have and likely be aggressive attacking this position in future years? I think at this point, unless the right prospects available, this is a good tackle class in the draft. So maybe the Seahawks will have a player they just cannot pass up that is going to be your eventual replacement for Dwayne Brown. That is certainly possible later this month. But I think if they don't find that player in the draft, if that player is not presented as an option for them, then I think they are going to be happy with what they have right now. They did bring back Cedric Ogbuehi. You've got Brandon Schell still under contract as your right tackle. They've got Tommy Champion still on the roster, a guy that was an undrafted signee out of Mississippi State last year that I've heard some decent things out of Seattle about what they think about his future. So he might be a player that can play his way into a reserve role. And of course, Jamarco Jones is still on the roster. So they've got some bodies at the tackle position. I don't know that it is an immediate need for them to address, but Duane Brown is getting older and you've got to be thinking about the future there. So if the right player is available, I can see the Seahawks rolling the dice in the draft and bringing in a player that they can start to develop to eventually replace him or replace Brandon Schell on the right side. We'll just have to see how that plays out. C. McCrowney writes, should the Seahawks bring in Todd Gurley to fill in for Carlos Hyde? And what would be an acceptable price? Well, I'm going to say this right now. I would not be paying Todd Gurley right now more than a couple million dollars based on what I saw from his production in Atlanta. I think at this point he's getting pretty close to being done. I just haven't seen anything close to resembling the player that was once an offensive player of the league in the NFL for the Rams. And I don't think they should consider bringing him in anyway. I think the only way I'm adding another running back at this point, after re-signing Chris Carson, they've got Rashad Penny coming back. They've got DJ Dallas, Alex Collins, Travis Homer. The only way I'm adding another back is late in the draft or signing somebody that's undrafted as a priority free agent. I'm not making any other moves. I think the running back position is in really good shape. They've got a lot of depth, a lot of really different runners stylistically that can complement one another. I just don't see that being a position of need at this point. Holly writes, what are the chances John Schneider goes into the draft with more than three picks, or do you think he would play it safe staying with a three in this year's draft, given the circumstances of everything this past year? So based on this question, I think this is asking if the Seahawks will go into the draft at the end of this month, adding a pick before then. At this point, I don't know where they're going to get that pick from. That's the issue. You had Jaron Reed that you could potentially move, but with his salary cap hit, they weren't able to find a trade partner. So without him being traded, unless you're going to move one of your big names like a Bobby Wagner, you just extended Tyler Lockett, so you're not going to be trading him. I just don't see any options for the Seahawks to acquire a draft pick before we get to the draft. Now, could they trade a future pick during the draft to get back into the fold and make one more selection? Absolutely. We've seen John Snyder do that each of the past 2 years in the seventh round. So they could do that. But I think they are going to have the three selections they currently have when the draft starts. We'll see what John Schneider can do with those three picks, how many extra picks he can add, what methods he chooses to do that. I just don't see any players that really they can move right now to get picks. And I don't see them trading any of their big name players. I think they'll have the three to start and maybe they'll end up with five, six, seven picks when it's all said and done. But I think three is going to be the starting point when we open the first round on April 29th. Edward, for our last question here in the second quarter, could you explain the voided years on contracts? Can they keep that player for the year that's voided, or are they a free agent and the Seahawks just pay them that money? Typically, when we're talking about voided contracts, they become void 5 days after the Super Bowl. That makes the player a free agent. And how this really works is that a player is signing, say, a five-year deal, but it's really only for one or two. It's a legal way that teams can circumvent the salary cap. So I'll give you this example. Let's say that Jaron Reed would have agreed to a restructure and it had an extra voided year added on for 2022. He would have gotten an $8 million signing bonus, and that's like a direct deposit. You're getting your money on Friday. There you go. Here's $8 million right up front, and only $1 million is going to count against the base salary. So he's going to get that $8 million up front as a direct deposit, and the team can spread out the cap hit now over two seasons instead of one. And with the cap going up next year, teams are going to be willing to make these moves because the dead cap hit is going to be easier to absorb. Let's say the salary cap goes up back to 190, 192 million or so next year. That extra $10 million now, you can absorb a $750,000 cap hit or a $1.5 million cap hit for doing this so that you can cut a player's salary cap hit for 2021 from, say, Jaron Reed's case, $13 million. They might have been able to get his down to like four or five. the amount of savings that would be created there. Why would you not do that given the circumstances with the salary cap being $182.5 million? It's only the second time in 27 years the salary cap has gone down. It's unique circumstances. And so that's why teams are doing these contracts. So ultimately, no. A player like Chris Kartz in that third year, they're not going to be picking up a voided option. Player's on the roster 5 days after the Super Bowl, then the contract becomes void and he's a free agent. And a lot of teams have done this strategy this offseason. And so you're going to see a lot of players that that's going to be relevant to when we get to 2023, 2024. Even next year, Cedric Ebwehi for the Seahawks has a voided year after his one-year contract. So we'll see some of these players hit the market again, and there will be some dead cap hits that their teams will have to deal with. But again, it's a smart business move given the circumstances right now. When I return for the third quarter, I'm going to continue tackling your Seahawks questions here. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Are you looking for a way to boost your workout game? Are you seeking a delicious protein bar without the sugar and carbs? Enter in the Built Bar, 18 amazing flavors, including nut and non-nut flavors. Some of the best ones, caramel brownie, cookies and cream, apple almond crisp, peanut butter, double chocolate. You're going to have a tough time eating just one. These bars are covered in 100% chocolate, soft, easy to chew. It's great for the health conscious guy. Lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, and they're great for a keto diet. Gluten-free and preservative-free as well. Visit BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON20 and you'll get 20% off your order. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Blue Friday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. The NFL draft is weeks away. It's time to start following our Locked On NFL draft duo. The Draft Dudes podcast watches every prospect so that you don't have to. And the Locked On NFL draft podcast is your daily draft news and mock draft podcast. Follow Locked On NFL draft and Draft Dudes on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. First question here, kicking off our third quarter mailbag. Swain Train writes, do you think the Seahawks are done adding to the defensive line, or would they consider Jadeveon Clowney, Alden Smith, Geno Atkins at the right price? So I'm not going to say it's impossible that the Seahawks could add one of those three players mentioned the second part of that question at the right price, just because we know the Seahawks value talent, and if you can get it at an affordable rate, then why not? I do think the Seahawks, though, if they're going to add to their defensive line, it would probably be in the draft. I'm not sure that we're going to see any more big signings because they've already brought in Kerry Hyder. And on the other side of the ball, the Leo position, you've got Carlos Dunlap, you've got Daryl Taylor, Benson Mayoa, Alton Robinson. They've got LJ Collier that can play the five tech, as well as Rasheem Green. The interior, you signed Al Woods. They've still got Puna Ford. They have Brian Monet. You have Collier and Green that can reduce inside and play defensive tackle in a pinch. I just don't know that it's an area that needs a ton of upgrades. They could certainly add another defensive tackle to help offset the departure of Jaron Reed. If Geno Atkins was available at the right price, then maybe he ends up being that guy that is a one-year stopgap because you only have three draft picks. But I find it hard to believe that Clowney or Alden Smith is going to be coming over with the moves the Seahawks have already made. I think the cap space they do have is probably going to be used to try to bolster other position groups that are not as deep and don't have as much talent. I feel like the defensive line right now is set up to be pretty darn good for the Seahawks in 2021. Donna B writes, if the Seahawks restructure Bobby Wagner only, how much cap space might that free up? Given the choice, would they use it to re-sign KJ Wright, or would they use it on a receiver? So if the Seahawks were going to do a restructure on Bobby Wagner, it would create up to $6 million in additional cap space for 2021. The downside is that it would create a larger cap hit for Wagner in 2022. And we're talking about a player that is going to be 1 year old soon. He'll be 32 next year. That's an aging linebacker that you already have a very large cap hit for. So again, cap's going to go up next year, so maybe it's worthwhile to do that, but making that choice is going to hinder your ability to make some moves next season with the rest of your roster. If they did this, as far as what they would do with the money, I think it's the same as right now. I mean, they're in a position with $6 to $8 million most likely available to spend. they could look at bringing back KJ Wright. I think that's number one on the priority list right now for the Seahawks. I think they still want to get something done there. But that third receiver position is also an area that is of concern. And the Antonio Brown rumors are not going away. Until he signs back with the Buccaneers or another team, the Seahawks are going to be interested. The Seahawks are going to be in the mix there. And so it's possible that Russell Wilson could finally get his wish and Antonio Brown would team up with DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. Those are the two things I think are most likely here. I don't see them adding another center in free agency. Corner, Richard Sherman, everybody wants to, a large portion of Seahawks fans would like to see him come back. But again, cost is going to be the issue. If Bobby Wagner was restructured, though, you'd have a bit more money available if you wanted to really pursue bringing Richard Sherman back to finish his career in the Pacific Northwest. There are a lot of options, and having that extra $6 million, they don't have to restructure all of that, but having some additional money would certainly help their chances of being able to make one or two more big moves going into the 2021 season. Miles Daly writing, to your understanding, is the relationship between Golden Tate and the Seahawks a burned bridge? And if not, do you see the Seahawks bringing him in? I'm just saying this based on a few conversations that I have had over the past couple weeks. I would not rule out the possibility that Golden Tate could come back to Seattle. I think it's probably unlikely that the Seahawks are going to do that. But we have seen players like Marshawn Lynch, and now there's all these rumors about Sherman as well. We have seen players come back to Seattle that maybe didn't leave on the greatest of terms. I could see a similar situation playing out with Golden Tate, and it doesn't look like there's a ton of interest on the market right now because he's an older receiver. He's 33 years old. He's still effective. He'd be a quality number three guy to go with Metcalf and Lockett, and he can still create after the catch. He can break tackles. He can run jet sweeps still at this stage of his career. So there's a lot of things he does well that would fit into Shane Waldron's offense. It's just going to boil down to money when you're talking about a player like this. And I don't know what the situation would be between him and Russell Wilson. I think a lot of the rumors that have been out there are inaccurate, but I wouldn't say they necessarily had a good relationship either. And so you'd have to talk to Russell Wilson. Hey, is it okay if we consider bringing back Golden Tate? I don't know that the bridge is burned to the point that they wouldn't consider it. I do think it's unlikely. Mo writes, what is the one position of need everyone is looking past and not worried about with the Seahawks roster? So that's a really good question. For me, I'm going to say the tackle position just from a long-term standpoint. And like I mentioned on an earlier question, if you have the right prospect available in the second round in this loaded draft class where there's a lot of really good tackles, if the right player is available for your system at pick 56 or whenever they pick first, you have that option there. The draft isn't just about filling needs for now. You have to be willing to look ahead too. And John Schneider's been good about that over the years. You have to strongly consider picking a tackle under those circumstances because you don't have a long-term option currently at either spot. Dwayne Brown is eventually going to start slowing down, and you've got to be ready for when that time comes. And Brandon Shell's got 1 year left in his deal. He had a solid season in 2020, but you haven't had a long track record of him being a starter quality player at the position. And so you're kind of waiting and seeing if he's going to be worth re-signing after this year. I think you have to consider if the right player is available there, picking at the tackle spot, looking for that heir apparent for Dwayne Brown. This is a really good class to find that player potentially. So that might be one position that isn't drawing a lot of headlines right now because the Seahawks do have two quality starters currently, and Abueyi gives them a solid swing guy behind him. But I think long-term, they do need to address that position. Greg Housman, next guy to be extended by the Seahawks, Dwayne Brown, Jamal Adams. Well, when I look at the guys that are entering the last year of their contract, those two obviously are very notable. Quandre Diggs as well. I think one of those two safeties is probably the next player that's going to get extended. And I know there are a lot of fans out there that are against the idea of paying Jamal Adams $17 or $18 million a year. I am not in that boat. I think he's a dynamic playmaker that was just starting to hit his stride in the second half of the 2020 season, and the energy that he plays with is infectious. The rest of that defense was playing so much better once he got back in the lineup from his groin injury that cost him four games, and he was playing with two bad shoulders, bad fingers, fighting through it. This is a guy that you want on your defense, and you're going to pay that price tag for him because he does some things that no other safety does in the league. And I think he's much better in coverage than he showed last year. He's going to be more comfortable in the defense. So I think they will reach an extension with him at some point. I would say it's probably more likely we see that happening closer to training camp. And as for Diggs, he's another player that they could potentially extend right now that I don't think you're going to have to necessarily break the bank to keep him around. I think he really enjoys being in Seattle. He's a quality safety, but not an elite one. I think you can extend him for a couple years at a reasonable price. And Dwayne Brown, I think you'd have to go year-to-year proposition with him. Maybe you tack on a second season. That helps a little bit with the salary cap issues. He's got a big hit this year. Maybe you can lower that a teeny bit with adding a second season. That is a possibility before training camp. His extension a few years back happened in late July. So that's usually the hot spot for the Seahawks to be active. I could see any one of those three players being next in line. I think the two safeties are more likely because they're in the prime of their careers. Young guys, they're going to be looking for 3-4 year extensions. I think Schneider's going to be working on negotiating those deals from here on out. But if I had to make a prediction, I think the next extension, the next big one, probably isn't coming until later in the offseason as we get closer to training camp. And our last question here coming from Andrew Sharp, how far will the Seahawks trade down before making their first selection over under set at 72? Right now, I'm going to go under 72. I think they're going to try to trade down multiple times, but I don't think John Schneider is going to want to move from 56 down to 76 or 80 without having made a selection either, because there are some position groups that are loaded that the Seahawks have major needs. So you want to take advantage of potentially having some blue chip players that are still available in the second round. This is a really deep class. I could see some guys that in other years are first rounders are available mid to late second round at certain position groups, including center. So take advantage of that. If the right player is available, I could see John Schneider saying, we're only trading down once. I could even see him sitting at 56 if the right prospect is there. We saw him do that with Jordan Brooks in the first round last year. If the right player's there, they don't get the right offer to trade down, then they'll pick that player that is atop their wish list. So I think it's going to be far-fetched that they pick any later than 72. If I had to make a guess right now, I think mid to late 60s is probably where we're looking at the sweet spot where the Seahawks make their first pick, and maybe they can add a day three selection or two by trading down. We'll just have to see what things look like. This is going to be a very uncertain draft, even compared to normal drafts. There's going to be a lot of questions about how many trade downs we see in particular out of the first round. It's a lot tougher to trade down in the second round than it is when you have a first round pick. The Seahawks don't have that benefit this year, unfortunately. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. Follow Locked On Seahawks on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or the all-new Audacy app. That's AUDACY. When Rob Rang and I return on Monday, we'll have our latest Mock Draft Monday on tap as we comb through a few national mock drafts to discuss who the experts have Seattle picking at pick 56. Enjoy your weekend. Thanks for listening. Go Hawks.